Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Welcome to Hard Currency, the Financial Times podcast, which looks at the big moves and big stories dominating the foreign exchange market. I'm Roger Blitz, and this has been a busy week for Forex. The US-China trade tensions are hotting up, yet the currency market seems unperturbed. Brexit talks seem to be souring, yet sterling seems unperturbed, and the Federal Reserve is gearing up for another rate hike next week on the back of a very strong US economy, yet emerging market currencies seem unperturbed. What is going on? Jane Foley, the Forex strategist at Rubberbank, is here to guide us through all these issues. Jane, let's start with US-China trade. Big headlines on Monday. Muted market reaction. Why?
Well, indeed there is. And I suppose the first response to that is, well, perhaps a lot of the bad news was already in the price. Perhaps the market has come to expect this. Perhaps the market's also anticipating something else. But I would also argue that perhaps that one of the bigger reasons why the dollar is failing to find traction on this, why emerging markets are failing to sell off on this, perhaps, is because we have had this news bubbling for a long time, and the dollar has had a really big run. Mm-hmm. So it's only natural that you have some position adjustments, some profit taken in the dollar, and I think that's exactly what you've had.
But the talks themselves, they seem to be now following a pattern. Reaction from China seems to be what we expected. Even actually the way the US brought out the tariffs, they were only going to be 10% initially. So everybody seems to be well choreographed for all of this.
Well, I suppose another reason for this is that we haven't seen that much reaction economic data yet. So, for instance, if we just look at Japanese export data that we had earlier on in the week, really quite strong. Strong to the US, strong to China. And these sorts of numbers allow the market to think, well, actually, maybe this isn't such a big deal. But the reality is that the economic data will always have been slow to show these strength. Particularly if you think about trade data. A lot of companies, a lot of countries maybe will have brought in a lot of Chinese goods before in the US, before the tariffs took place. So you'd have a front loading of stocks and of course trade data is always very backward looking anyway.
So the market may be too complacent?
Indeed it might be.
And do you think it's kind of the market is looking at the midterm elections as some kind of a break in US-China trade tensions?
Well, of course it is another focus for the US dollar, for politics. It will be really quite interesting to see whether or not the support for Trump remains different or the same afterwards. So from that point of view, it is a different focus. But I think it's really quite interesting too, because there is a lot of rhetoric now about the trade suggesting, well, okay, you know, we all know that trade is going to be, or the trade wars are going to be massively disruptive. But actually, if you look at what commentators in the West say about Belt and Road, relative to Chinese commentators, there is a completely different opinion. And an awful lot of commentators are saying, you know what, perhaps somebody did have to stand up to China. So there is a slightly softened aspect perhaps coming through on that front as well.
Okay. Brexit. Before we get on to the nitty-gritty of that, the interesting thing was that a few weeks ago we were saying, it's all about Brexit, it's not about the data. And yet here we have, you know, the retail sales, inflation, all pointing towards a very stronger, a much stronger sterling. So why?
Indeed. Well, you know, I think the broad consensus was that Brexit is going to slow. It has slowed investment relative to how it would be if we didn't have political uncertainty. And therefore, we would have a slower economy. And actually, these data are counter to that. We have, as you just said, really pretty strong retail sales now for the last couple of months. And we've had, of course, stronger inflation data too. And I think the takeaways from those numbers are that if we didn't have this political uncertainty, the Bank of England would probably be hiking interest rates again this year. So in terms of what the money market or how the money market has read this, it's brought forward its anticipation of the next move from the end of next year, perhaps to the middle of next year. And that consequently has had an impact on the pound. But I do think that the political uncertainty and indeed what type of Brexit deal there is, if there is one, will ultimately have that bigger impact on what the Bank of England can do.
We're doing this podcast, Jane, as the Salzburg summit is still going on. And it's very hard to read these headlines, but it does feel like the market wants to believe the good headlines and wants to kind of tuck away the bad ones.
That's because of positioning. Yes. So, you know, if we look at positioning data over the last few months, the market had been building up these big shorts in sterling. And therefore, any little glimmers of good news is therefore going to move the market more than any bits of bad news. And so that's what we've had over the last week particularly. But now that we've had this bit of better news in the market, I think we do need a little bit more to keep feeding that better tone in sterling. And I'm not so sure that we're going to get that better news.
You're worried that the market is simply completely misreading the headlines, or just doesn't have... It's just looking at the cursory headlines and not digging deep enough.
I probably some of both. And I think it is certainly the case of many of the clients that I meet, in fact, many of my colleagues. There is a huge amount of confusion over the whole part of the Brexit news. Mm. And I think for many people, that has meant that they're sidelined. Mm. So actually, there's less people involved. So I think that explains why volatility in sterling has been perhaps more limited than you would expect, given the huge amount of political uncertainty this year. A lot of people just aren't yet getting involved. And I think for many people, they do want to see a little bit in more greater clarity what a deal, or if there will be a deal.
Many events to come, including two important party conferences. You wouldn't want to advise anybody listening to this which of those events is more important than the other, or is it the event on March the 28th, the day before?
Clearly all three, and really in terms of the Labour Party conference, clearly that is important, whether or not Jeremy Corbyn can cement his power or not, because you know whether or not there is going to be a change in leadership in the Labour Party in the next couple of years is really important for British politics. Yes. And also for the Tory Party conference, will there be a leadership challenge in the next few months? You know, we need to look through that party conference. And indeed, even if the EU and Theresa May agree on some sort of compromise deal, will there be enough support in the UK Parliament to push it through? And that's the sort of question that we're looking at the Tory Party conference to try and get a feel for.
Excellent. While everybody is on the sidelines still on sterling, they're very much not on the sidelines as far as the Federal Reserve and the dollar. They are meeting next week. There seems to be a desire to sell the dollar this week, as there has been since the middle of August. Again, I'm sure you're going to say positioning is all to do with that. What do you expect the Fed to do about forward guidance?
Well, again, I think this is really important. I mean, generally speaking, if we come out of a crisis era, you would perhaps expect that there would be more hazy or less defined forward guidance. I mean, after all, if you think about when forward guidance, you know, really became useful, it was during or just after the crisis years. Mm-hmm. Carney, of course, was a big writer of forward guidance. So in this sort of period, perhaps you'd expect a little bit less. But the forward guidance, I think, is really, really important. I mean, the Fed has been really quite hawkish and suggesting that it could hike as many as four times this year. We want to know what it's going to do in 2019 and potentially a little bit beyond. And it's interesting that surveys are beginning to suggest that many economists are looking for the US cycle to peak and then go into recession, perhaps by 2020. So that's not that long away. And how the Fed perceives the risk of perhaps overheating in the US economy, how it's going to react to that, I think is really crucial.
There has been some commentary by some Fed members about this yield curve inversion issue. This is when, if you could just explain actually for this, why is that important in relationship to the recession?
Well, generally speaking, if you have the inverted yield curve, that is generally at the market at predicting a recession, if you like. So that's been a thing for much of this year, the position of the yield curve and the market saying, well, hang on a minute, market participants through the shape of that yield curve are signalling that a recession is on its way. Yeah. And that has given a flavour, I think, to all Fed meetings this year.
But yields have been going up, though, haven't they?
Yes. Week? Now, over the last this week, really, we've seen yields, the 10-year yield, for instance, holding above that 3% level. Yeah. I think we had about five consecutive days now of yields pushing higher.
So that worries, is receding?
So that would suggest. But, of course, there are lots of technical factors at play, too. So, for instance, this year there's been a lot of corporate issuance in the US. And often, if investors want to buy that corporate issuance, they might have to sell their government paper. And that might mean that there's just a technical factor at play here. So There's all sorts of reasons as to why these things might happen. But certainly, generally speaking, the shape of the yield curve can be really important to what goes on in the US economy further down the line.
Just finally, Jane, I mean, the other side of dollar weakness is strength in other currencies, and that depends on whether those central banks of say G10 countries are ready and willing to raise rates. We've seen Norway decide to raise rates this week. We've seen very strong data out of Norway and out of Switzerland. The Swiss National Bank is less keen on it. Are we kind of on that point whereby having discounted now slower growth in some of these countries and say, yes, it's very much back on, are we back on board that kind of rate normalization train that we were on at the start of the year? Or can we expect more and more caution from central banks?
You know, I think it's both. I think what we can expect.
You can't have both, I'm sorry.
What we've got is the start of the interest rate tightening cycle, but at a much more cautious pace than we've ever seen before.
Right.
So, for instance, at the end of last year, the market was anticipating that we would soon see the ECB hike interest rates. The ECB's guidance is that it will be the second half, really, of 2019. So the pace of this normalization is extremely slow. And that goes with the fact that, yes, we have had more inflationary pressures, but inflation remains very capped. And that's a feature, really, of wage inflation also remaining very capped. And that's something which is common to just about the whole of the G10 for various different reasons in the labour market. Yes. So no particular rush by very many central banks to hike interest rates. The Fed, of course, has been the anomaly, and consequently, you've had the strong dollar this year.
Yes, and you've talked about the possibility of a US recession. Of course, if there are recessions elsewhere, then it may this very slow pace of rate normalization may come along too late and too slowly.
Well, indeed. Although it is perhaps a problem that the Fed and other central banks don't have as much ammunition to head off another recession or another crisis.
My thanks to Jane Foley of Rabobank. So next week it's the Federal Reserve meeting, and we'll be talking about what we learn about that all important guidance on future rates. Join us again on Hard Currency. Until then, it's goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.